Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're concerned about mental health or looking to get into self-improvement, join me at the Piece by Piece podcast. There, I'm interviewing everyday people and experts alike about how to overcome difficulties around mental health. Speaking of which, I just released an interview with a mental health historian and another with two friends who are healthcare workers.
If these conversations interest you, check us out at Piece by Piece. That's Piece with an A, B-I, and then Piece with an I. Thank you so much.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
You really got a feel for Eliud Kipchoge, one of the world's greatest ever athletes. And trying to break his own world marathon record in Berlin yesterday, he set off at a blistering pace, running the first half in under an hour. That's the first half of a marathon. 59 minutes and 51 seconds. But he learned what the rest of us plodding marathoners have long known. If you tear off at a mad pace, you're going to pay later on. And so it was for Kipchoge, who blew up to such an extent he could only manage to shuffle around the second half of the course in 61 minutes, 18 seconds, therefore chopping a measly 30 seconds off his world record and finishing more than a minute outside the two-hour barrier. Is there any point lacing on those marathon shoes if you're not going to break 2 hours if you're Eliud Kipchoge at this stage? I say no. Mm-hmm. Welcome to Monday Second Captain's Podcast. Hi, Murph.
Hey, Owen. I'm not entirely sure what I just heard. I think I heard you giving marathon advice to Eliud Kipchoge. Is that what I heard? Or
just saying, if he wants to break the two-hour marathon, two-hour barrier, you know, you just got to... can't be going at that mad pace.
He can't go much slower than 59 minutes on that first half if he wants to break 2 hours.
This is a novice talking. Can you always want to be finishing stronger? You want to leave yourself.
So the second half should be faster than the first half.
First half he should have gone around 60 minutes, 20 seconds, 30 seconds. Just giving him that. Just so he could still have the 2 hours within sight, not be too far away from it, but leave a little bit of gas at the end instead. What's the point? Two hours, 1 minute, 9 seconds or something?
Is it typical that the second half would be run faster than the first half?
Ken, I don't know if you remember this, but Owen came back from one of his marathon efforts and told us that he ran the second half quicker than the first half. And you immediately started accusing him of using performance enhancing drugs.
No, that was actually my first ever marathon. And Ken followed me live online, I think, in that race. That's how he was very into my career back then. Unfortunately, interest has dwindled somewhat more recent years. But well, certainly for the plotters, Ken, we'd be told, probably try and conserve some energy for that second half.
Yeah.
Don't go nuts in the first half.
I'd be inclined to conserve energy, sure, but there's still no way I'm running the second half quicker than the first half. You know, it's like, go as hard as you can for as long as you can, and hopefully there's something left in the tank. That makes more sense than this
philosophy.
This idea that you're crossing the line, you're like, oh God, I could run for another 10 miles. Well, I mean, listen, that's not what you want to feel at the end of a marathon. Mm. You want to empty the tank so that there's literally nothing left after the 26.2 miles. You're literally out on your feet. You could not run another 100 yards.
I love the idea that you've... is pretty much it, Murph. I like the way that you've simplified it to that extent, though. That's how exactly... And you're definitely going to feel that at 26.2 miles and not at, say... 19.2 miles and 7 grim miles still.
I just think if Kipchoge, you know, were to become a world service member, he'd be able to get these sort of bon mots, these like nuggets of wisdom for me and you on
Fiverr a month.
Just for Fiverr a month. I mean, he's got plenty of money, Lord knows. He's winning around him at the moment. He's on top of the world. And with a little, you know, a few tweaks here and there from the coaches and from other, you know, interested parties, I think he can actually break this two-hour barrier.
We spoke about him with Cathal Dennehy last year after Cathal had gone to Kenya to meet him. He told us how Kipchoge has this total aversion to celebrations. He's no interest in welcome home parties, basically anything along those lines. As he said to Cahill, if you're driving a Ferrari at 300 kilometers an hour and you look in the rear view mirror, what happens? You crash the Ferrari. So no, I'll never look in the rear view mirror. A mentality that would chime with one of our greatest, one of Ireland's greatest active sports people, Paul O'Donovan, who was at it again over the weekend. O'Donovan and Fintan McCarthy backing up. We had a load of medals, in fairness. Wasn't just the guys, but they got their obligatory gold medal. McCarthy and O'Donovan backing up their Olympic and European success by winning another world gold together in the lightweight men's double sculls. A fifth world title for O'Donovan. Amazing achievement. And yes, Murphy gave a classic in the genre of nonplus Paul O'Donovan post-victory interviews.
Lads, massive congratulations. You're simply unbeatable by this stage. And Paul, for yourself, your fifth consecutive World Championship gold medal. How does that make you feel?
Oh, it's fine, yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah.
You come here, obviously, with expectation and the pressure, but you make it look so easy.
I don't know, like, there's no expectation or pressure, really. Like, I think that's just something people talk about, you know, and we wouldn't be too concerned about what people think.
I've defended some of these in the past, Murph, to be fair. And I don't think we should be holding it against Paul O'Donovan when talking about his greatness, but that was a bit lame.
Like, come on.
That was just a bit annoying.
My feelings on this are on the record. And, you know, it would feel maybe churlish to repeat those feelings. But Jesus Christ, Paul, you know, David Gillick,
a top broadcaster, very good in those situations. And even
absolutely
he, you can sense it was
brilliant.
Kind of a nervous laughter. It's like, this is hilarious and all, but I do need something. So
yeah,
over to Fintan.
Yeah. I can already see the balls tweet saying, oh, O'Donovan added again, crying, laughing emoji. But at the same time, you know, I was sent out here to try and get some quotes. So, you know, I'd rather not just be, you know, memed. I'd rather just do an interview rather than have like this ridiculous thing that will no doubt get retweeted 1,000 times.
Hey, listen,
or whatever.
If he keeps winning world, European and Olympic titles, then I guess he's entitled to celebrate whatever he wants. Maybe someday, I don't know, maybe someday, Murphy, you'll get what you want, which I know is the full Roger Federer retirement level of emotion.
My wife's been so supportive. She could have stopped me long, long time ago, but she didn't. She kept me going and allowed me to play, so it's amazing. Thank you.
I know, that's what Murph wants, Ken. Nothing but that. I also, in that scenario, what you need is
Ken.
Do you know what you need? You need one of the rival Italian rowers.
I want to know what Ken's laughing at there. Hold on, so Ken. What are you laughing at there now?
Just he's just the perfect guy, isn't he? He really is. Now, my wife would love that. She would love that. But she loves Roger Federer. I mean, I'm sure she hasn't heard that clip, but if she heard it, she would love it.
But what about Rafa Nadal? Is it Rafa Nadal was the real star of the show? He was gushing as much as Federer was. You see the photo of them holding hands, both of them breaking
down. Well, like Kang and Kodos. it was lovely. Nadal was sad. I mean, it was nice to see such respect between two such great guys.
They were also passing their wisdom on to other players at the Laver Cups. So the Laver Cup is an event. It's Team Europe versus Team World, Simon. Isn't that what it's called Team World. Ken's a big Team World guy. We've been talking about Laver Cup, nothing but Laver Cup in the office all day. Ken's Team World.
Team World.
I'm Team Europe. And this is Rafa Nadal. The visual here is right. Fabio Fognini, this 35-year-old player, 35, right? Not a guy who's at this stage going to learn much more about the game of tennis. He's been there, done that, gotten as far as a quarterfinal of the Grand Slam at one point, scraped into the world's top 10 at one point. A fine, very good, high-level player. But is he the man you want to be talking like this to when you're Roger Federer and beside you is Rafa Nadal hovering over this poor guy at a change of ends in one of his matches?
Positive. If you go back to return, you do it because you have a good intention. If he hits a good forehand, okay, you respect it. Maybe he was lucky. It doesn't matter. But
good one. I go inside because I can see.
Believe in the good thing. Yes, you cannot be frustrated and think that something bad is going to happen or he gets lucky. Make him hit a great shot and be like, we accept it.
Stop being so negative, Fabio. I mean, what is it about two of the greatest players of all time standing over you
that's making you feel a little
nervous? Inadequate here? All right, yeah, it was Nadal stepping in with the Spanish as well, which I must say was pretty impressive.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Just a crying big baby.
But you cannot call it a player a baby.
Coach! Coach!
Coach! This is the game you wanted a victory, but it didn't happen. What happened?
I want victory for every game.
Where do you think you got it all wrong today?
Coach! This is the game you wanted a victory, but it didn't happen. What happened?
Well, it's just the nervousness.
You look frustrated on the
Coach!
Pitch.
This is the game you wanted a victory, but it didn't happen. What happened?
You wanted victory.
Well, I wanted victory.
Coach! This is the game you wanted a victory, but it didn't happen. What happened?
Where do you think you got it all wrong today?
Won against them in the Premiership, and we never said they are baby.
He's just a crying big baby.
And you cannot call a player a baby.
A quick note to let you know, our Scotland versus Republic of Ireland podcast is out now. Okay, I was about to call it the Canning and Fanning show again, but I mean, I used the gag twice during the pod itself and had to apologise at one stage to both of
them. Well, this is a whole new
members.
Pod, though, so I say go for
or
it.
Both of our
the Canning
guests,
and Fanning show.
Ken, Murph, also, you weren't around for that one. Ken, I've gotten Ken on the record saying that if we lose to Armenia tomorrow and get relegated to Nations League Group C, Division C, whatever the hell we're calling it, this would not be good. Ken, even though it's somewhat scoreboard journalism, if we're to lose to Armenia last tomorrow night, Ken would be somewhat miffed.
Wow, boxed him into an untenable position there, Owen, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I can't believe you got him to admit it. He admitted it.
Full coverage of the football during the week. You can become a World Service member, if you're not one already, on secondcaptains.com for a fiver a month, plus VAT. That goes for you too, Kipchoge. A big weekend just gone for the two Irish lads playing the AFL Grand Final, Zach Tui and Mark O'Connor, becoming only the second and third Irishmen to win an AFL title. They got it done early. Their Geelong team against the Sydney Swans, opening up a 35-point lead at quarter time, the biggest in a grand final since 1989, and ending up winning it by 133 points to 52. I did see one or two people grumbling about how boring a sport the AFL is. I got to be honest, when there are blowouts like that, as has been happening a lot, Geelong seems to be blowing everybody out. It's one of those sports, I suppose, like many, but you need it to be somewhat close for there to be much joy to be got for. Or you need two Irish people on the winning team, which is what we got here. So let's not grumble about the margin of their victory.
Yeah. I think every sport needs matches to be a little bit more competitive.
I think what
that.
I mean is, in the AFL, this seems to happen, certainly when I used to watch it more regularly, would happen quite a bit. One team would just run away by the end of the first half and you're left with it. But listen, who cares about that? Zach Tui's 250th appearance. He's a huge name over there. Mark O'Connor, not so much. Rowan Connolly was on last week. He was explaining that O'Connor's built a good reputation for himself as a tagger, I think the word was. Basically, the guy who stops the other guy from playing. You know, good discipline and fitness levels. Like a man-to-man marker, essentially. And he got that job during the grand final with an injury to another player. Does it. So great stuff for him, Murph. Really good story for him. It's interesting that he is that, by the way, that's the role, that very specific role that he seems to be playing over there, because I think he would have been considered it might surprise people, because he would have been a very, very
like
well regarded footballer
over here.
Yeah.
I mean, and by the way, grand finals are unbelievable occasions.
Like visually, you know, the MCG is such an amazing.
This is brand. What I should have been talking about, rather than the how some people found the match itself not very exciting. The fact there was 100,000 people there. It was the first one back at the MCG for a few years, and it seemed like it absolutely looked amazing.
Yeah, and you know, you obviously you can grumble, you know, and you're right to grumble, of course, on at the lack of any sort of competition whatsoever. But geez, the occasion looked absolutely unbelievable. And for Tubi, you know, you are talking about kind of the culmination of 12 years of like consistent excellence, you know, like to go over and do what he's done in a sport that, you know, obviously we don't need to remind people is not the sport that he grew up playing, not the sport that he grew up trying to excel in, to play it 250 times. And for that 250th game to be the culmination of an entire career's work, it's a brilliant story, absolutely brilliant story. And the footage of him walking around with the Port Leash flag, everyone will have seen it, but still absolutely just deadly. And, you know, he's someone, I don't know if you read the Kieran Lillis interview in the Irish Times on, I think, Friday morning, but it was so good, kind of outlining how proud people in Port Leash are of him and how kind of destined for stardom he was in whatever he decided to do. Even as a 15 and 16 year old, Lillis was talking about, we all kind of used to head over to a housing estate that a bunch of us lived in, and anything we tried to do, Zach was just better at everyone at everything. So it was no surprise to see him take to the AFL in the way that he did. But yeah, Mark O'Connor is an interesting story as well, because obviously Kerry went on a run of winning All-Ireland minor titles with unbelievably brilliant teams, and Clifford was the standout star of all of those teams, obviously. And the numbers he put up, you know, 4-5 in an All-Ireland final against Down and against Derry, just ridiculous numbers. But after that, it was Sean O'Shea and Mark O'Connor were looked on as the next two kind of gold-plated, guaranteed Kerry senior players for 10 years out of all those minor teams. And so he, you know, it was a major loss to Kerry when he left. And it was kind of similar to it may have even focused Kerry minds in relation to Clifford, because obviously the AFL were kind of sneaking around Clifford as well, and certainly had, you know, the offers were on the table for him to at least go out there on trial and stuff like that. And maybe it put Kerry on high alert that, listen, okay, if we lose Mark O'Connor, there's no way we can lose David Clifford. And, you know, the Clifford rumours were shut down pretty quickly. But, yeah, for O'Connor to go over there, and again, you know, you are leaving a situation in Kerry where, you know, you're loaded everywhere you go, your life is mapped out for you. You know that if you kind of keep it between the ditches at all, that you're going to be playing for Kerry for 10 or 12 years and all of that, and to just leave all that behind, go over to the AFL and be a no-mark, and, you know, be the guy that can't, you know, that can't kick the ball straight for 6 months. That, you know, that takes a lot of guts. And obviously he was like kind of hanging in there. I mean, even talking to Rowan last week, you know, I was looking at the number of appearances that he's made, and, you know, he's made a lot of appearances over the course of the last three seasons. So it's not that he was kind of hanging on for a contract and, you know, managed to squeak onto an AFL team. I mean, he was genuinely very unlucky, I think, to not have been named in the original lineup that was released on Thursday night, our time. So it's a brilliant story for him. Yeah. Absolutely amazing story to go from Dingle to Melbourne and the MCG in front of 100,000 people. That's pretty cool.
Rowan Connolly, we've mentioned a couple of times already, he presents a Footyology podcast. We have him on regularly over the years. He's always really good, particularly on the broader kind of questions, such as those that came out of this unbelievably disturbing ABC story last week about the treatment of Indigenous players at the Hawthorne Club, where it's reported that these players were separated from their families and were isolated, separated from their partners. I'll let Rowan pick the story up here with some detail on one particularly awful allegation.
The allegation is that this one particular player was advised very firmly that he should try to talk his partner into terminating her pregnancy because they were worried about the impact this would have on his football. And that is literally just the headlines. There's more detail besides this. Stories about how Indigenous players were told to hand over their mobile phones. They replaced their SIM cards so their families had no way of contacting them. There was one female partner of a young player who couldn't contact him even to tell him that she'd had a miscarriage after being pregnant. That message was apparently passed on to him third hand in a very insensitive manner, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the other point about this too is that football, it has been proactive in this space for a long time. The fact is there are more Indigenous players in the AFL than there are Indigenous people in society at large. You know, the percentage is quite far higher. AFL clubs have decent sort of welfare structures set up around their Indigenous players. Most AFL players play with several Indigenous players, so they're exposed to Indigenous people, where a lot of people, particularly, say, in Victoria, where I live, don't ever meet Indigenous people. So people in the AFL world have far more contact with Indigenous culture, and I guess it makes me think, well, if people having had the benefit of that still have these sort of archaic views about, you know, it's okay to do what they allegedly did, how bad must things be out in society at large where people haven't even had the benefit of any sort of exposure to those cultures or education in how we should coexist with them?
There you go. Yeah, that's just part of the chat we had that we played in full last week for World Service members. Rowan spoke just really well about attitudes to race and to Indigenous Australian people, not just within the AFL, but as you get a taster of there in society more widely. Also, last week we were chatting GAA on Friday, Murph. We framed a conversation around the difficulties a number of counties seem to be having in appointing a senior intercounty manager. Among them being Monaghan, up until last week, Roscommon, Donegal, these kind of very well-established GAA counties. You made the point at one stage that the GAA should acknowledge how much time and effort goes into it and just pay the managers properly, give them full-time paid positions. Brian Hogan accuses you, amongst others, as being involved in a drive by certain elements of the media to professionalise GAA. It's bizarre. We have the greatest volunteer organisation in the world. Why would you want to compromise that? The GAA should clamp down hard on the black market payments to managers. It would stop wannabe Jose Mourinho's calling 5 training sessions a week fairly lively and restore balance to players' lives. We've had 10 years of elitism, in inverted commas, in intercounty, and what has it resulted in? The game is ruined, has become boring to watch. Successful counties all counter-attacking teams spending too much time working on the risk-averse tactics. We need the opposite of elitism in Gaelic football. We need more mistakes, more chaos, more freedom, more fun. Elitism is disengaging every day GAA from the game, and it has become a runaway train. What do you think? So the main point there is it's already too, in inverted commas, elite. And there's too much professionalism. So why have more? We want less. We want less structure, more chaos. And we certainly don't want managers being paid.
See, like, this is one of these situations where, you know, you can acknowledge what's actually happening, or you can kind of close your eyes and ears to it. You can say that the GAA can try and clamp down on managers being paid, but no one in the GAA actually wants to do that, wants to do anything more on that other than say exactly what Brian said there, which is someone needs to clamp down on the payment of managers. Now, is it going to be me? No way. Is it going to be my club? No way. Is it going to be my county board? No way. The former Director General, Padraig Duffy, 10 years ago said, okay, he was going to grasp the nettle. The first thing he was told, 3 words he heard, even before he announced at Congress, or he even, like, all he did was fly a kite at a Congress. The first 3 words that he was told by everyone before he did this was, don't go there. That was said to him a million times, right? Mm. He outlined the situation, right, where there is a problem in the GAA with under-the-table payments to managers. Under-the-table is an important phrase in this because a previous GAA president, Peter Quinn, said that when he started digging into this, that not alone could he not find the under-the-table payments, he couldn't even find the table. So Padraig Duffy went to Congress, asked the membership a very direct question. Should we come up with a system whereby the managers can be paid a wage for their services, like a fee that the GAA... I mean, we don't even need to know the fee. We just say he has agreed a contract, they've agreed a price, there we go. The second option was crack down on illegal payments, and we're an amateur organization, so here we go. That's what we're going to do. Or C,
do nothing, stick our heads in the sand and pretend nothing's wrong.
I remember this. There were a lot of respondents answering C, weren't there?
It was unbelievable. To be fair to Pádraig Duffy, he did kind of, it was like a darkly comic moment the following year when, having made this big speech at Congress the year before, he came back to the following year's Congress and said, well, the votes are in, and literally everyone has said option Z. Like, he did actually say that. So, I mean, the idea that the GA are going to clamp down on payments is just ridiculous.
Well, in fairness, Brian here, if he was in that, our emailer would have gone for option, whatever it was, option B, clamp down.
Well, he would have at least gone
for some sort of action on it. So, because you're saying it's like he's you know, it's not head in the sand. So if Brian is acknowledging this is an issue, but he feels the issue should be dealt with, not dealt with by actually paying all the managers there.
Well, listen, you know, all credit to Brian, you know, but can Brian be absolutely certain that I don't know if Brian from Adam, but is Brian absolutely certain that the club that he supports has never paid a manager €150 a night to come in and coach their senior team or their first team? Can he be absolutely sure that the county board that organized the games in the county that he supports has never paid an outside manager anything other than the agreed mileage rate? If he had any suspicions, did he raise them at a club meeting? Did he go into a county board meeting and take his shoe off and bang it off the table and say, what the hell is going on here? Like, the fact of the matter is, everyone is complicit in the hypocrisy that's going on. And merely what I suggested, which Peter Canavan agreed with on Friday, was it's happening anyway. Surely the damage that people think paying a manager does to the idea of sort of the amateur and volunteer ethos of the GAA isn't half as great in my mind as the damage that the hypocrisy that everyone knows is going on in the GAA does to the overall image of the GAA. The hypocrisy is much more damaging than a set agreed contract which has like terms and regulations and rules. A contract in exchange for services where there's money handed over that everyone, and including revenue, revenue will also know about this, as opposed to these like daft figures being paid. And who knows? Maybe inter-county managers are declaring all this money. Maybe club managers are declaring all this money. I mean, I don't know how. I mean, it's up to an individual to claim to acknowledge this money is coming into revenue, but then there's a paper trail, and I don't know that all clubs and all county boards are able to handle that if that becomes an issue. Basically, what I'm saying is, it's a black market, you know, and like that's fine if that's what you want to do, but the idea that you can clamp down it and stop the idea of illegal payment, that's not going to happen.
Well,
so why not regulate it?
Well, why not take it back a bit and address the source of the problem, rather than trying to treat the symptoms?
What's the source of the problem?
Training. Why are these teams training?
Do you just not believe in practice at all, Alan Iverson style, or do you believe that the games to training ratio is woefully out of whack?
Well, I just don't see the point of this training arms race in an amateur sport which is only played in one country. You know, why are we doing this? You know, I mean, and if you're talking about it,
funny enough, that like that is kind of the way the GA has tried to deal with this, and that there are like training ban, you know, like you're not allowed to go back until the end of November. It depends on when you're knocked out of the championship, but they have tried to have like a defined off season for intercounty players so that they can't just be on like a 12-month sort of hamster wheel of constant training so that these managers can get paid for every night of training that they do. Like, in a way, that has been the most effective thing stopping these managers earning even more money than they already are, which is that you say, okay, well, can we at least lower the games to training ratio to something like, you know, 8 training sessions for every one game you play, as opposed to, you know, 25 to every game you play.
Stopping training entirely would seem a little radical to me. I think it might affect the quality of the matches and the
fitness levels. I feel like the high performance athletes that GA players are would balk at that. The idea that they wouldn't even know who their teammates are until they turned up
for a
game.
It's about performing on match day.
Once again, Ken, you're insightful, it's a sideways view, and I always appreciate it, Ken.
Yeah, but then
really
there's always Ken gives you these sideways views that always then chime with something that is in your head. I will give you credit on that, Ken.
The GAA,
the training thing, well, actually, that is talked about quite a lot by a lot of people.
Less is more, you know. Less is more. So
more games, no training.
We're already reducing the calendar, and now it's time to reduce the training and slowly legislate the GEA out of existence, which will solve this problem of illegal payments.
Well, that is, yeah, that is,
which has corrupted the GEA.
Radical. Okay.
Your ultimate, your the final solution, Ken Early style.
Thanks, Murph.
Thank you, Owen, and thank you, Ken. Guramagos, Ken.
Thank you, Kieran, and thank you, Owen.
Thanks for listening. You can check out the daily podcasts on secondcaptains.com. Sign up now for just $5 a month, and you'll listen to them all. You can hear them all ad-free. Don't forget, Second Captains is part of the Acast Creator Network.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys. It is not war and death and famine, it's not that at all. It's the opposite of that, it's to persuade that there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.